This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Over the past few days, two stories developed that focus on al-Qaeda and the war on terrorism. The battle along Pakistan's border with Afghanistan that might or might not involve senior al-Qaeda leadership, and the battle here in Washington over a newly published book that alleges that the Bush administration mishandled the war on terrorism before and after 9/11. We'll get to Pakistan later in the program, but we begin with Richard Clark, a White House advisor on terrorism and counterterrorism who served the past four presidents, including George W. Bush. In broadcast interviews and in a new book titled Against All Enemies, Inside America's War on Terror, Clark charges that the Bush administration failed to focus on the threat from al-Qaeda before September the 11th, that the president and some of his top advisors focused on Iraq immediately afterwards, and failed to prosecute the war in Afghanistan properly because forces and resources were held back for a subsequent invasion of Iraq. The White House describes the charges as deeply irresponsible. If you have questions about Clark's allegations and the response to them, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with White House correspondent, NPR's White House correspondent, Don Gagne. Good of you to be with us today, Don.
Hi, happy to be here, Neil.
Tell us a little bit more about Richard Clark, if you would.
He was the former head of counterterrorism at the White House before becoming head of cyber terrorism under President Bush. There was a reorganization that took place. But the counterterror job was also a job he held in the Clinton administration. He was carried over during the transition. It should be added, though, that Mr. Clark had a 30-year career in this field with the government. He has worked not just for Presidents Bush and President Clinton, but for President Reagan and for the first President Bush. And now, a year and a half after having left the White House, he has written this book, which contains these very, very serious allegations.
So basically, what does he say?
Well, he basically says that this is a White House. This was a president who, from the beginning, was focused more on Iraq and dropped the ball, essentially, on the whole effort to confront al-Qaeda and the kind of terrorist threats that were out there by organizations like al-Qaeda. But again, specifically, he says that this administration was warned during the transition and very early on that al-Qaeda posed a very serious threat. He says they did very little about it. Then we get to 9/11, and Clark describes a conversation that he had with President Bush on September 12th, a day after the attacks in New York and at the Pentagon. And he says that the president pressed him, even tried to intimidate him, is the language that Clark uses, into finding a way to link this to Iraq. Clark says he told the president at the time that the CIA says there's no link, that that other intelligence agencies say there's no link, that there isn't a link. It's al-Qaeda. It's Afghanistan. And the president gave him a look and made it clear that he wanted him to go back and come up with a report and see if there wasn't some way that they could make those kinds of connections. Now, that's something that the White House just denies flat out.
That there was no meeting.
They don't necessarily deny that there was no meeting, though they do say there is no record of it. And it apparently, according to Clark's recounting of it, happened in the Situation Room of the White House, and that he was kind of pulled aside by the president. And the White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan, actually just briefing as we speak, just finishing up, said that they keep track of whenever the president is in the Situation Room, and they don't have anything that would put him in that room at the time Clark says that meeting took place.
And the White House and Republican Party spokesmen have had a lot to say about what Mr. Clark has had to say.
They are pulling out all the stops to try to discredit him. We're hearing it from the podium here at the White House. We have seen National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice all over television this morning. She is in today's Washington Post with a big op-ed piece in which she says the administration did a great deal to address the al-Qaeda threat from its earliest days in office. So she says that there's absolutely nothing to it. The Bush campaign is weighing in as well. Scott McClellan, again, the press secretary, he called Richard Clark's statements and the book itself irresponsible was the word he used, and he said that Clark is flat wrong. They are really, in a sense, trying to portray him as somebody who's got a personal axe to grind. They say he's trying to sell books, that he's playing politics in an election year, and both the campaign and the press secretary have pointed out that one of Clark's closest friends, a gentleman named Rand Beers, is the foreign policy advisor to Senator John Kerry. And, of course, we all know who Senator John Kerry is and the job he wants.
Do we know at this point, is Richard Clark a Democrat? Is he an activist Democrat, or has he been a government a bureaucrat all his life?
He calls himself an independent, and he says he has been proud to serve the presidents he has served from both parties. So that's his answer to that.
There in the White House briefing, as you mentioned, Scott McClellan at one point cited an interview that Mr. Clark had given to National Public Radio in an attempt to help discredit him. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, that came up in the morning briefing, the first briefing this morning. It's a briefing that's called The Gaggle. It is the first meeting of the day between the press corps, the White House press corps, and the press secretary. Excuse me. It is on the record, but it is not on tape. So we don't have tape of McClellan. But he was basically saying it's curious. Why didn't Clark come out with any of this earlier? Why did he wait so long after leaving the White House? If this was all so urgent, he should have come forward to it. And in the category of attacking Clark's credibility, he pointed out what he called contradictory statements that Clark has made over the past year and a half. One that he cited was that interview that Clark did on NPR. It was on Weekend Edition with Scott Simon. It was exactly 1 year ago today. And Scott's quote today, I've got it on my notes here, was Clark talks about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction, and then he says, after all, they've had weapons of mass destruction now for about 20 years. That was on National Public Radio, March 22nd, 2003. All of that is Scott McClellan quoting Clark on National Public Radio. Now, that's a very short quote. It's 13 words by my count. It seems to be saying Clark agrees with the White House that Iraq was a threat and that it had those weapons of mass destruction. But the quote he pulled out today, that McClellan pulled out, is taken from a much longer statement.
And why do we let listeners hear it? We have a tape of that. So this is the excerpt from that interview between Scott Simon and Richard Clark.
There's a real debate, I think, as to whether or not Saddam Hussein or his regime would ever have transferred weapons of mass destruction to terrorist groups. After all, they've had weapons of mass destruction now for about 20 years, and there's no evidence that they've ever transferred them so far.
So that's a little bit more in context of what he actually had to say, which is...
Exactly. And Clark seeming to make the point that even though they've had them and that we've known about it, that it's perhaps not as big of a threat as the White House is implying that it is.
Okay. Obviously, much more to come on this story because Mr. Clark tomorrow, I believe, testifies before the 9/11 Commission.
He does indeed.
Okay. Thanks very much. NPR's Don Gagne speaking with us from the White House. Joining us now for some more context on the issues surrounding the Richard Clark memoir is James Mann, a senior writer in residence at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the author of The Rise of the Vulcans, The History of Bush's War Cabinet. And thanks for you for joining us today.
Good to be with you, Neil.
As we heard, Richard Clark, a national security official who's worked for four presidents. Do you know him to be a trusted, well-respected insider?
I can remember him working not just in the Clinton administration, but in the previous two Republican administrations. He's clearly not a partisan.
I don't know if you've had a chance to read the entire book as yet that Mr. Clark has written, but from what you've seen of what he's had to say, how does it jive with what you found out about President Bush's war cabinet?
He's saying a little bit more than, say, the former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who did his own separate book a couple months ago, saying that he'd heard President Bush talk about Iraq in the earliest days of the administration. O'Neill is easier to discount. I mean, he's the Treasury Secretary. He's spending his time on economic issues. Things didn't work out. If he happened to hear something about Iraq in passing, okay, and he it may have been easy for him to hear, you know, talk about overthrowing Saddam, which was actually the outgoing Clinton administration policy too, and take it for more than it was. this is something else with Clark. Clark is different. Clark is a career bureaucrat. Again, worked in four different administrations. And it's not as though he's dealing with or hearing talk about Saddam Hussein in passing. He's the guy responsible for counterterrorism. He's the guy on the line. And if he's unhappy, if he was unhappy or frustrated in the Bush administration, it was because of problems he saw on his own issues, which were counterterrorism. And furthermore, he's saying it looked to him as though the administration was preoccupied with Iraq to the detriment of work against al-Qaeda. So to me, it just takes things a little bit further than Paul O'Neill.
Which might explain the level of reaction to it from the White House, at least in part.
Yeah, I would think that they may be wondering now just, you know, how many officials who've left the government and how many books there are going to be between now and November. But this one clearly seems to have upset them.
The idea, I think that, let's talk a little bit about your book and what you had to say, which it also addressed some of these important questions, but in a slightly different context. You were talking about a group of advisors to the president, Mr. Armitage, Condoleezza Rice, Paul Wolfowitz, Don Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Dick Cheney. You call them the new Vulcans.
Right. Actually, originally, some of Bush's campaign advisors in the 2000 campaign gave themselves the name the Vulcans. They did that just on a whim because Condoleezza Rice had grown up in Birmingham. A couple others had Birmingham connections. Birmingham's a steel town, and there's a huge statue of the Vulcan, the god of the forge, over the town. And to them, I think the name conveyed, you know, toughness and resilience and so on.
Mm-hmm. And they were the ones who according to you, sort of cast the Bush administration policy, set it in that course where Iraq was the target and apparently not even all that diswobbled, according to the accounts we're hearing most recently, by the events of 9/11 itself, at least in the president's mind, still looking for evidence to tie 9/11 to Iraq.
Right. Again, all of these officials had served in previous administrations, and so people had the impression, inaccurately, as it turned out, that when they took office in 2001, that the policies would be similar to those of the outgoing Bush administration in 92. And from the very first weeks of this administration, things were different. They really were pushing things in different directions. They were pushing missile defense. They were taking a tougher policy on North Korea, and we now see more and more they were pushing for the overthrow of Saddam Hussein.
Let's see if we can get a caller in quickly. David joins us from Miami, Florida.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for your last guest to mention Paul O'Neill. I just wanted to come back on this for a second because I don't think we should discredit Mr. O'Neill, who was a Secretary of Treasury, a cabinet member. We now have two very, very high-level officials in the Bush administration who both are saying that they were privy to meetings with the president where the president, before and after September 11, clearly wanted to attach Iraq to terrorism and wanted to invade Iraq. So I'd like to comment on this, please.
And if you could keep it brief, because we're running out of time, I'm afraid. James Mann.
Yeah, to me, the lower ranking of the two means more because he really knew the details of terrorism policy. He knows.
And by that, you mean Mr. Clark?
Yes. And it has never been entirely clear to me how much Paul O'Neill understood on terrorism policy. It just wasn't his thing. I don't mean to discount him at all, but Clark carries more weight to me.
We are talking about how a former Bush administration national security official charges that the Bush administration failed to focus on the threat from al-Qaeda before September the 11th and kept its focus entirely too much on Iraq thereafterwards. And we're taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing a new memoir by a former Bush administration official, Richard Clark, in which he charges that the administration failed to focus on the threat from al-Qaeda before September the 11th and was immediately thereafterwards too focused on Iraq. Our guest is James Mann, the author of The Rise of the Vulcans, The History of Bush's War Cabinet, also a senior writer in residence at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller on the line. Ulysses is with us from Newport News, Virginia.
Hi, Neil. I'm just calling to find out. I remember leading up to the war in Iraq and even before September 11th, in a couple of interviews with Mr. Bush, he made a comment about Saddam Hussein. This is the man who tried to kill my father. And I wonder, ever since I've been hearing all these debates about that the war was pre-planned way before September 11th, and I'm starting to build up this anger, primarily because to me it sounds like it's a personal vendetta, and I was wondering if your panel had any comments or anything about that, because like I said, to me it's building more of an anger. Basically, I supported the president up to that point, but when I heard that statement, to me it just made it sounded like a personal vendetta trying to...
Well, let's get a comment from James Mann. As a reminder, there was the first President Bush was to visit Kuwait to celebrate the anniversary of the liberation of Kuwait in the first Gulf War, Desert Storm, and there was a plot uncovered that is said to have involved Iraqi intelligence in an attempt to blow him up. James Mann, do I have the details of that right, more or less right?
Yes, you do. That's a serious thing, needless to say, to try and assassinate a former president of the United States. Having said that, I don't think that the motivation for moving against Saddam was a personal vendetta. You can put it in there as a lesser factor, but we're talking about a much larger American policy. We're talking about an effort to show America's military role in the world and an effort to change the Middle East. I would say the factors, not to mention Saddam's own abuses, I think that there are a lot of factors in there, and personal vendetta is way down on the list.
From what we've seen between Paul O'Neill and now Mr. Clark's book and your reporting as well and that of others, was the talk of Iraq before 9/11, was that, and obviously it would depend on who you were talking to and under what circumstances, but that was that on the order of, boy, we're going to have to settle this guy's hash someday, or is that on the order of, were there specific plans? Were there plans for an invasion?
That's a good question. The real specific military planning for an invasion comes later. The detailed working out of with the military of what to do really picks up in the early months of 2002. In fact, that's what produces this whole public debate in the summer of 2002. In the 2001 period you're talking about, I think it's we're going to have to do something rather than a specific idea to go in. And then I think on September 11th, the significance of what Richard Clark is writing is that immediately the president begins thinking about Iraq. What was on public record before is some talk by members of the Vulcans, as I call them, Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz, and then a debate a few days later, a fairly serious policy debate at Camp David about whether to include Iraq in the American response to September 11th. What Clark has is really just in the first 48 hours, the president himself immediately asking about Iraq. That takes things to a different level.
Ulysses, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's talk now with Gary, and Gary's with us on the line from Memphis.
Yes, great show, Neil. I'm trying to understand how Richard Clark obviously gives the current President Bush a failing grade on the war on terror, but what would you think Richard Clark's view would be about the Clinton administration's view of terror? And isn't it always dangerous to play the 2020 hindsight blame game with this?
James Mann, that may be one of the areas that might involve actually reading the book, which I don't think either of us have done.
I can say I've seen reported comments that, that he had mixed feelings about President Clinton. He obviously was not happy with the Lewinsky scandal and thought that was a diversion, but said that he was reasonably responsive in dealing with terrorism. On the other hand, obviously, the Clinton administration didn't stop, which was a factor that the Bush administration took into account.
Do you think he fairly indicts Condoleezza Rice? And, you know, her character and intellect is such, it just seems foolish to make the accusation that she'd never even heard of al-Qaeda before September 11th.
Yeah. I have to admit, does he say that she'd never heard of al-Qaeda? Because there were a whole series of meetings and warnings, and I thought the whole issue was whether the administration had responded.
I think he describes her at one point in an oral briefing responding or not responding in such a way as if he deduced she had never heard of al-Qaeda before.
It's just foolishness on his part to say something like that, because people can see that Condoleezza Rice is not a woman that's out of touch with what's going on in the world.
Yeah, I would find it astonishing that she wouldn't know or be able to identify al-Qaeda. I would find that difficult to believe.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
And I guess a question that has to be asked, Gary, is, by the way, Gary, thanks very much for the phone call. And James Mann, I guess a question that has to be asked is the timing of all of this. It comes in the midst of a presidential election campaign. Why Mr. Clark perhaps didn't say it sooner? I know you can't speak for him.
Yeah, well, it takes some time to write a book, that's for sure. On the other hand, you know, I'm sure a publisher realized there was a campaign out, didn't want to bring it out in 2005. Then that raises the question, should he lay everything out the day he resigns? I don't know. I guess officials rarely do that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get another caller on the line, and this is Tim, who's with us from College Park, Maryland.
Yes, I read in this morning's Washington Post an editorial by Condoleezza Rice that seems to be saying exactly the opposite of what Mr. Clark has been saying in his book and on the air. I'm wondering what your guest thinks about the difference between those two positions.
You know, it's hard to reconcile them right now. We've got the September 11th commission looking at precisely this. The administration and Condoleezza Rice say that they heard these warnings and reacted to them. It's Clark's allegation that they didn't react enough. And without really looking at the details of the classified information, we're not going to know. And that's what the 9/11 Commission is doing right now. So what?
But isn't the director of the 9/11 or the executive officer of the 9/11 Commission somebody that Clark claims that he briefed with regard to terrorism?
The executive director is someone who's been quite close to Condoleezza Rice for years, correct?
That's Phillips. All right. Thank you very much.
Not only that, I would point out that Mr. Zelikow wrote the national security strategy or drafted parts of it on which the proved to be the justification for the war with Iraq.
Mr. Zelikow, the Condoleezza Rice aide who's now an executive director of the 9/11 Commission.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Former colleague, not aide, yeah.
Yes, get that correct. Anyway, Tim, thanks very much for the call. Getting back, James Mann, to some of the other reasons that you outline in your book, The Rise of the Vulcans, The History of Bush's War Cabinet, as you looked at them, what were the reasons that were being discussed amongst those very senior advisors who were thinking about the future policy of the Bush administration and the possibility, I guess, down the road of intervention in Iraq?
Well, I think we have to separate between public justifications and what were they really thinking. The public justification, of course, relied heavily on weapons of mass destruction, and many of them believed that. The question is imminent threat. Certainly, they also mentioned frequently Saddam's abuses, although Saddam's abuses go back 20 or 30 years and hadn't provided the justification for military action before. As I say in the book, there's sort of a larger vision that the Vulcans have of America's role in the world. It's one that's based on American military power and making sure that America is the dominant military power in the world, not just now, but for the foreseeable future.
And the Middle East was extremely important to members of the Balkans. It is extremely important. They, some of them, including Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz, have taken an interest in the problem of how to maintain access to the oil of the Middle East going back to the 1970s. So I think these larger factors, which they don't really lay out in public, helped bring them to the war.
And do you does the picture of the Bush administration that, that Richard Clark apparently paints in his new book, Against All Enemies, is that picture of a president, at least, who is not focused on the terrorism problem for the first 9 months of his presidency, does that square with what you've been able to find in your book about other members of his cabinet?
That seems to match. In the early months of it's not just that they were focused on whether they were talking about Iraq. In fact, their policy on Iraq was something else at the time. They were trying to impose a different kind of sanctions.
Smart sanctions, as they called them. At
exactly.
The time, yeah.
But they were interested particularly in a number of other dramatic changes, particularly missile defense. And they were preoccupied with issues involving China and North Korea. So, no, I don't think that they were particularly focused on terrorism in those early months.
And China, obviously, we have to remember there was an incident involving an American reconnaissance aircraft almost as soon
right.
as the president took office. And, of course, these issues, when they're particularly a new administration, tend to be foremost in your mind in the first couple of weeks of the administration. And as the pattern developed, though, was the talk of in the Pentagon of military transformation that Donald Rumsfeld was at the head of, was that in any way, do you think, aimed at, excuse me, Iraq or just the situation as he saw it?
That one, I think, that was separate of Iraq, from Iraq. The president had made a campaign commitment for military transformation. It actually wasn't originally Rumsfeld's thing. It was the whole Bush team. Bush had given a speech in favor of military transformation during the campaign at a time when no one knew Rumsfeld would be defense secretary. And he kind of took it over and in those first 8 or 9 months got into big trouble pushing ahead with transformation. And people forget now, but on the eve of September 11th, there was plenty of talk that Rumsfeld would be the first cabinet member to leave the administration. He was having so much difficulty.
But much of the thinking that you were talking about seems to underlie the philosophy that was expressed, I guess, in the president's speech at West Point and subsequently in the national strategy document.
That's right. They were moving rapidly and after September 11th developed new doctrines to in favor of preemption, that the United States would take military action to preempt a possible adversary.
James Mann, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Neil.
James Mann is a senior writer in residence at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. His new book is The Rise of the Balkans, The History of Bush's War Cabinet.